I'm your host, Pearson Cross. Today we are talking to a couple of people who have some experience with fraternity sororities and also hazing. In particular, we're talking to Leanne Kowiak, who was originally from Yonkers, New York, currently lives in Tampa, two children, Harrison and Emma, and is here to talk about a painful past incident in her life and has what she's done since then. Welcome to the show.
Pearson, thank you very much. Good morning, and I'm so grateful that you're having me here to discuss this very important topic.
Absolutely. Pleasure to have you. We are also joined by Jim Slayton, who is born in Lafayette. He's a UL alumni, law school at Tulane Business School as well, past president of the Alumni Association, and currently alumni chapter advisor for Phi Kappa Psi. Phi Kappa Psi, I think I got that right.
Yes. Thank you very much, Pearson. Glad
absolutely.
To be here.
Well, Leanne, let's start with you. We're here to talk about hazing on college campuses. I know that you have a personal connection to this issue. I realize it may be hard, but tell us, our listeners, your story as it relates to your son, Harrison, if you would. And at this point, I'd like to warn our listeners that it's not an entirely happy conversation, but an important one.
So true, Pearson. It's very important that Harrison's story is told because it represents, sadly, so many young men that have lost their lives to senseless hazing. Let me just let your audience know that I am not a professional speaker. I am not a hazing expert. I am a mother who is speaking from the heart. And sadly, in 2008, we lost our firstborn son, Harrison, to a fraternity hazing. If I may just briefly tell you that Harrison was the type of individual that when he walked into the room, he lit up the room, Pearson. He befriended everyone. He was funny, but he just loved his sister so much. His younger sister is 9 years younger, and it was just devastating when a parent gets that phone call that no parent ever wants to receive. Harrison was in high school. He took to golf. He loved golf. He was the captain of the golf team, and he knew that in college he wanted to play golf. He went off to college, to Lenoir Rhyne University. He knew that he had to focus on his studies because he was there on an academic as well as an athletic golf scholarship. And it was that summer between freshman and sophomore year, and we had the conversation. We're a very close-knit family. And he said, "Mom, Dad, I'm thinking about joining a fraternity." And so that's when he broached the subject with us. And we asked him questions because neither one of us was in Greek life. And we said, "Is it safe?" He says, "Yeah, Mom, it is. You know, the guys on the golf team have my back. They want me to pledge Theta Chi because they're going to be leaving and graduating. And they want me to carry on the legacy." And so as a result, he went back his second year, and he decided to pledge. And it was the weekend of Parents' Weekend, and he says, "We're driving back to campus." He says, "Mom, I only have 2 more weeks to go. My husband wasn't able to attend with our daughter because they stayed back in Tampa for a volleyball tournament that my daughter had. So we're driving back," and he said, "Everything should be cool, Mom. Don't worry, and I'll see you in Thanksgiving in Atlanta." Well, Pearson, I'm sorry to tell you that we got that phone call, and it was just as if that rug is pulled right from under you. We were shocked. It was the big brother who had called me from the ER room from the local regional hospital near Lenoir Rhyne University, which is located in Hickory, North Carolina, about 40 minutes away from Charlotte. And he said, this was the first version of the story, Pearson. He said, "You know, Mrs. Kowiak, I'm so sorry to call you so late, but we were playing intramural football on campus, and Harrison caught the football and fell down hard and injured himself. I talked to the doctor." He said, "Mrs. Kowiak, please make your plans to get on the first flight. We are going to airlift him to Charlotte, North Carolina." Because we didn't know the severity of what was going on, we didn't want to alarm his sister, so my husband stayed home. I took the first flight out to assess the situation. I got up there to the hospital. I went into the hospital room, and I'm looking at him. He's already connected to tubes, and he's got bandages on his head, and I'm screaming, "Harrison, Harrison, Mom is here." And he's not responding, Pearson. Come to learn that he had a severe brain trauma injury. He was bleeding profusely. They had to drill a hole in his skull to relieve the pressure. He was already, Pearson, on life support. I called my husband. I said, you need to get up here right away with our daughter. We need to be together for Harrison. Pearson, I'm just telling you, and I will go into the graphics of what happened that evening, but I'm telling your listeners, if there's anything that they take away, don't be a bystander to hazing. Please stand up to hazing. Talk to your students, your children. This hazing goes on in middle school and high school. People think it's just fraternities and sororities. It's also athletic groups, intramural sports, bands, clubs, club activities. And also call 911 right away. God forbid anything happens. Don't waste those precious minutes. Because these young men didn't know what to do. They panicked. And like I said, the story had changed a few times. Had they called 911, would the outcome have been different? Perhaps. Would you like me to go into what happened that night?
Yes. So the first story you heard was that playing intramural football on campus, but the story started to change. When did you get a sense that maybe that wasn't the entire story and then go from there?
Okay. When there was a knock at the door, when we were in Harrison's dorm room and we were going to go through his personal effects and, you know, take home what we felt was important.
This was after he had passed?
That's right.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Yes. We were in the hospital room, and I know I'm jumping back and forth, but yes, we were in the hospital room. The doctor says, you have to make a decision. We have to pull the plug. And I will tell you that that was a gut-wrenching decision, of course. And then I needed to decide to talk to my daughter, who was 9 at the time. Will she go in and say goodbye to her brother? And I wanted to talk to her and give her that option, but to prepare her. Harrison is injured, and it's going to be difficult. Do you want to say goodbye? And she says, Mom, I want to say goodbye to brother. I want to hold his hand. Pearson, my daughter is now 20 years old. I am so thankful that I gave her that opportunity because she doesn't have regrets. She had that opportunity to say farewell to her brother. So once we made that heart-wrenching decision to take him off of life support, we went back to his dorm room about 40 minutes away, back at Lenoir Rhine, went into his dorm room. And what's the first thing I see in his room on his bulletin board is a picture of his sister and the essay that she wrote, Who is the Person That You Most Admire? And she wrote about her big brother. They were so, so close. Harrison, again, was the type of person that when he got his first used vehicle to transport himself from Tampa back up to North Carolina, it was a used Volvo. We wanted a safe vehicle for him. And Harrison, what did he do? He went to the elementary school, picked up his sister, and took her out for ice cream. He had such a giving nature, and he just wanted to take care of her. When we were in that dorm room, there was a knock at the door. Pearson, it was the big brother and the other pledge. You see, there were only two pledges, Harrison and the other man. There were 5 originally in this pledge class, and 3 dropped off. They decided not to pursue it. But Harrison and the other pledge thought that they would continue to be in it to support one another and be there for each other. So the big brother and the pledge knocked at the door and they said, Mr. and Mrs. Kowiak, we wanted to just let you know that it wasn't a intramural football game on campus, but it was a team building activity off campus. Team building, Pearson, once I heard that word, it just raised a red flag in my mind, and me and my husband, we looked at each other, and we just felt that something just didn't sit right. And of course, then we pursued our investigation, and we learned that in November of 2008, they had taken Harrison and the other pledge 20 miles off campus. It was a very dark field. There was only the moonlight and maybe some of the headlights from the cars. There were some of the fraternity brothers that were bystanders standing on the side of the field. And then there were the brothers that were on the field that were doing the physical assault. And what did they do? They were wearing dark-colored clothing. They told Harrison and the other pledge to run from one end of the field to the other end of the field and touch the sacred rock. But unbeknownst to Harrison and the other pledge, they would be tackled from the left, from the right. They didn't know what was going to happen. Harrison was 6'2". He was a golfer. He never played physical type of sports like tackling and what have you, football. So he got hit one too many times, and he hit his head hard. And remember, it's November. That time of year, the field is very hard. And they panicked. They didn't know what to do. They thought that Harrison was joking or fooling around when he didn't get up. But then when they saw that he was starting to convulse, then they took action and put him in the car and started driving him to the regional hospital and then called 911. Pearson, if they had called 911 right away, there is a helicopter field that was right there, again, because they were 20 miles away from campus. That helicopter could have taken them to the trauma center in Hickory, in Charlotte, North Carolina. And so it was just an atrocious incident, senseless. When you belong to an organization, nobody should ever be hazed.
Well, your story is obviously terrible and tragic and something that no parent should have to go through, particularly the deception. For those in Louisiana, knowing what we know with Max Gruber and others, this sounds similar, you know, to something that we've gone through. This sounds like recent events that we've heard about. Have you talked to other parents who've also lost their children? Do they tell a tale that's somewhat like yours or different or the same, or do you find yourself returning to kind of the same points?
So, Pearson, for the first time in February of this year, 2018, a group of parents got together for their first meeting under the name of PUSH, Parents United to Stop Hazing. We got together in South Carolina, and sadly, the bond, the common thread that we all share is that we have lost a child to hazing. Most of the parents' child was pledging a fraternity. There was one where it was a banned hazing. They happened to all be young men whose lives were taken away. But we know that hazing can happen to women as well. The stories are very similar, and some are physical assaults where individuals are just beaten and paddled, just have to ingest terrible substances. And in many, many cases, alcohol is involved, Pearson. And that is just out of control. So we are trying to do something about it. Number one, in PUSH, to support and be there for one another. And of course, sadly, last year, there were four hazings. And then I have recently learned four hazing deaths.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Pearson, I have just recently also learned that a student, Rustam Nizad Muttendorf, has sadly also lost his life. This student here at University of Louisiana, he wasn't even in a fraternity. He was a victim of just being an innocent bystander, just happening to walk at 2 a.m. from his friend's apartment back to his apartment. And sadly, a pledge, probably sleep deprivation, was driving a vehicle. And he hit Rustam. Rustam lost his life. Rustam is an international student. Losing a student is one thing. The parents being so far away, just as we were in Florida and happened in North Carolina, and his parents are so far away, it is out of control. And I appreciate the fact that you are broadcasting this episode that we can educate during National Hazing Prevention Week.
The incident you referred to, and we're going to have to take a break now and come back, but the incident you referred to, I believe, is the one where there was a fraternity on campus that was, in fact, doing what often happens to pledges, sleep deprivation, some form of hazing, and one of those pledges was driving and maybe fell asleep and actually accidentally hit someone who was walking. So that person's death is sort of a corollary, been attributed to the hazing practice that was going on. So just to clarify what you were talking about, we're gonna go to a break, and when we come back, we'll talk some more.
Thank you, Pearson.
Thank you.
I'm Lisa Mullins. PRI's The World brings you more than just the day's news.
In Cameroon, we have 260 languages.
We introduce you to people around the globe.
For a country like Iran, where you cannot really mingle with people outside your house.
It is giving hope to Turkish people.
There's one Chinese saying, everyone wants to be a rich guy, right?
Join us and hear the world.
Monday through Thursday afternoon at 2, here on KRVS. The world feels like it's getting bigger all the time. There are daily developments on major stories around the world, and more great music than at any other time. Staying current isn't always easy. But when you listen to KRBS, you hear about people, places, and ideas that matter to you, and you discover great music every day. Your support of KRBS makes that all possible. Please make your contribution today, online or mobile at krvs.org, and thank you.
Hello and welcome to Bayou to Beltway. Today we are talking with Leanne Kowiak and Jim Slayton about a very difficult subject, hazing. According to a recent Atlantic article, up to 80% of fraternity members report being hazed. According to some, it's not an aberration, it's the norm. And in fact, there's some hazing incidents at UL that may not be as widely known. And you know about a particular issue you're going to talk about?
Well, I was just going to amplify on what Leanne was talking about with respect to the Kappa Sigma incident here at UL, where Rustam Nizamutdinov unfortunately was killed. Yes, there was after a hell week where unfortunately the young man, the pledge, was sleep deprived and ran his car off the road and struck Rustam in kind of a serendipitous incident. UL did conduct an investigation, and they found that Kappa Sigma they conducted an investigation, interviewed several 20 or 30 members of the fraternity, and I've seen those interview notes. And from those interview notes, those kids were paddled in a tradition that maybe had gone on for as long as 3 years. They were forced to fight each other for the entertainment of their active brothers, where some of them had bloody noses and, shoulder separations. They were punched. They were burned with cigarettes. They were forced to ingest marijuana cigars. They were doused with hot sauce to make their skin burn. Water was poured on them in a hose, and they were left outside.
This is outrageous. This is an organization you want to join. They're doing that to you?
Yes.
It's crazy.
And so I think that leads to two points, Pearson. One is, why would someone endure that? And the reason is, and I know Leanne can talk about this more than me even, but people want to join. And the longer you have a pledgeship period, the more invested that member becomes. So the more willing they are to suffer that last week of hell. The Rustam incident with that pledge actually occurred in November after a homecoming game. But they had invested several months and, just get through this hell week and then you can join. So one of the things I think you can do to perhaps alleviate the problem is either eliminate pledgeship or at least significantly reduce it. Because while all fraternities have values that would never condone hazing, and all fraternities provide education around hazing, it's still very prevalent. So that's one thing. And I think the other thing that, from a policy standpoint, that the UL situation points out is transparency. PUSH and other organizations have called for fraternities and, more importantly, universities to have scorecards that show what kind of disciplinary action fraternities have endured in the past. And this effort to try to hide these hazing incidents from the public or not disclose them adequately, I think, is going in the wrong direction. Because I know in Phi Psi with my kids and all this stuff was going on with Kappa Sig, then later, unfortunately, Max Gruver died. And of course, the reaction at UL was much different. There was a much greater public response. And some of the kids in my fraternity said, Jim, you tell me that we signed this contract and you had to report hazing, and you tell me we have to be transparent about this. But yet what I see is a lack of a hypocrisy here. While I think we have a very good Greek office, and I know that they do a lot to try to educate members, et cetera, and they're bringing Leanne here is just one example of that. But at a higher level, there needs to be, I think, more transparency. One of the things Phi Psi is doing too is they are going to have on their website a scorecard that they're developing themselves for each fraternity, each chapter in their 100-chapter system, so that parents can go to their website and see what kind of disciplinary problems those chapters may have had in the past.
Interesting. I'm wondering if, you know, with PUSH and other organizations and the prevalence, you know, you'd start to get a national kind of movement away from fraternities and requiring fraternities to kind of clean up their act in order to bring people back to them. It doesn't seem like hazing is an aberration. It's the norm. Why do fraternities and sororities haze, Leanne? What do you think?
Well, this is, again, from the mom's perspective. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not the hazing expert, but I do feel that individuals want to get involved with fraternities and sororities to make instant friends. And the hazing goes on because they feel that they have gone through it the previous year, mm-hmm. and they feel that it is a tradition or a culture. And they're saying, well, these new pledges, they need to go through it as well, but they're making it even like 10 times worse for them because they're taking out perhaps the aggression, their anger on what was done to them.
Yeah, projection, that might be called. Your son Harrison died in a hazing game. I actually hadn't heard of the game like that, but there are other ones like that. Other deaths have been, like Max Gruber's, have been from alcohol or the one on UL's. Related from sleep deprivation. How can we make colleges safer for kids who want to pledge?
Great question, Pearson. So my take on that is I feel that alcohol is a big player in all of this. So if you can do something about the alcohol, which the NIC has taken a stand and saying...
Could you unpack that for us, NIC?
That's right. Judd Horace? Yes. And... saying,
that would be the National Infraternity Council.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And they are saying that they do not want the alcohol served by, you know, somebody from their fraternity. It has to be a third party. So that should be going into place. I believe they have to do that by next year, 2019, if I'm not mistaken.
I could add just a little to this. I mean, I think, you know, if you look at UL is now going to require there's a law in Louisiana now that requires training. Every student who's in a student organization needs to have 1 hour of hazing training annually, including fraternities and sororities. There's hazing in other organizations. But the reality is that the hazing that kills is, generally speaking, fraternities. And the reason for that largely is because of alcohol abuse. And fraternities that have limited alcohol abuse have seen much lower incidences of hazing, and it translates into lower insurance premiums for them. And one of the leaders in this area was actually the fraternity that Max Gruber was a member of. That fraternity has banned alcohol in their houses since 1990, and they've had a significant reduction in their insurance premiums.
It certainly didn't help Max Gruber.
No, it didn't. So that gets to the next question. It really goes to the culture of each chapter on each campus. So you can have rules and regulations. The first step is training, I think, and every fraternity is going to do hazing training. UL does hazing training. The year that Rustam died, they had a national speaker, Michelle Guabata, come and speak like Leanne did this year to talk to fraternities and sororities about hazing. So everyone's trying to do their part. So you do the training, but you tie it back to the values of the organization. You have transparency so that when things go wrong, people – you have accountability, and then you have transparency around that accountability so that people can see the consequences for bad conduct. I think that that's kind of, in a nutshell, what you need. At Phi Psi, for example, last year, our chapter passed – I mean our national organization passed a rule that we're no longer going to permit hard alcohol at any Phi Psi event, period. When you drink too much beer, it's hard to drink so much beer so quickly that you get drunk enough to kill yourself. But when you start forcing people or coercing people to drink hard alcohol, like what happened to Max, and Max's parents actually spoke at our national convention, so they actually told me this directly, you know, that this that the problem is hard alcohol being make.
I have to say, Jim, I'm a little. I'm less than optimistic about the effects of these laws and rules. I mean, Max Gruber was in a fraternity that, you know, was supposed to have the lid on drinking, but in fact died of drinking Everclear or 100-proof alcohol.
Yes.
Louisiana has recently passed four laws, HB 78, So people who take part in hazing activities that result in death face up to 5 years in prison. HB 793, that's House Bill, requiring universities or colleges to expel or suspend students who haze. Any person who at the scene of someone's injury has to immediately, they're required by state law to take steps to do something like, in this case, call 911 or whatever. And then finally, students who report violations are protected. Those are all well-intentioned, and they passed very just about unanimously through the legislature. Leanne, do you think something like that will help, or does something else need to be done?
Well, it's certainly a step in the right direction. I feel that it is going to help. We need tougher laws, Pearson, across the country, and maybe even at a federal level, because only 44 states in this country have hazing laws. With Harrison's death, we live in Florida. It would have been a felony. In North Carolina, it was a misdemeanor. They just got a slap on the hand. So there are four families, the Piazzas, the Penn State hazing, the Brahams, sadly another Penn State student who sadly took his life because he was hazed horrifically, the Max Groover family, the Groovers, and us, the Kowiaks. These four families are partnering in an organization called Anti-Hazing Coalition. So we are partnering with the NIC. We're partnering with the National Panhellenic, the Panhellenic groups. We're partnering with the Association of Fraternity Advisors and hazingprevention.org. And people will say, why would you partner with them? We feel that we cannot work independently of each other. We cannot work in silos. We have to communicate, and we all know that something has to be done about it. Nobody wants blood on their hands. But, Pearson, everybody has to be held accountable. That's the universities. That's the alumni. The parents need to ingrain it in their heads. And they have to be strong also and say, come on, son, you know, just put up with it because I was in this fraternity, so you should do it as well. You need parents that are standing up against hazing. The national fraternities and sororities also have to take a stand. And these chapters are unbelievable. Every chapter is different. I'm not going to go out there and say all fraternities and all sororities are bad. I'm telling you, I have met some outstanding, philanthropic, service-oriented people in Greek life. But there are individuals, that 10%, that gives it a bad name. So we need to do something about it collectively.
Well, it's clear. The time is now. Last question, perhaps, Ms. Kowiak. What's next for you and your crusade? You're going to continue traveling and talking to groups and taking your message where you go. What's the future look like?
Yeah, so my mission the first couple of years, you lose your firstborn, your son. And of course, I was just devastated. It would have been easy to just turn a blind eye, put a blanket on my head. And I was walking around in a coma, basically. You put on that face when you're at work, and the evenings were very difficult. However, I'm a mother. My daughter is still there. My husband is there. My husband grieves differently than I do. And so we had to pull together as a family. And I was just sitting at the kitchen table one day. I'm not going to have lost Harrison without a fight. I need to make sure that people know that the dangers of hazing are very real. So it is my mission to go out and speak at high schools as well as college students. When I spoke last night here at University of Louisiana, I will tell you, it warmed my heart to see these 19, 20, 21-year-olds who were paying attention, who came up to me afterwards and gave me a hug and said, Mrs. Kowiak, my mom doesn't have to worry because I know what hazing is. And when the golf team of the University of Louisiana just happened to sit in the front, that to me was a sign because Harrison was a golfer, and to me that meant so much to me. So I am so grateful for the community here, but the university, I applaud them, and Dean Perez, who is really doing a lot to try to help students and take care of them and save lives.
Thank you so much for coming to the show and spreading your message. We've been talking this morning with Leanne Kowiak and Jim Slayton. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bayou to Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.